p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm simply delighted to be able to pick up another show on Monday. So now you can hear The Raw Deal both Monday and Tuesday, 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time, 4 to 6 Eastern, 1 to 3 Pacific. I'm delighted. I think Revolution Radio is just doing a super job of getting a whole lot of truth out to the American people. Now, today's show, I'm going to begin by giving you an overview during the first hour of the latest news in my take, and then we'll open the lines for callers during the second hour. I do have a guest lined up to discuss political developments familiar to this audience. Rolf Lundgren will be back tomorrow. First hour, he'll give his analysis, then we'll take calls, and Rolf's agreed to stay and field your calls, so I'm delighted. Meanwhile, as the whole world knows by now, whether or not she has been on ice for the last year or so, as many of us suspect, the Democrats decided the time was right to announce that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is dead at 87. We have a whole lot going on here where Ginsburg had announced in July that she was undergoing chemotherapy for lesions on her liver, the latest in her several battles with cancer. She spent her final years on the bench as the unquestioned leader of the court's liberal wing and became something of a rock star to her admirers. She had an unusual relationship with Antonin Scalia, who was at the opposite end of her in terms of understanding the Constitution, matters of law, but they were great friends, in part because of their profound mutual appreciation for opera. When Scalia died in 2016, also an election year, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell refused to act on Obama's nomination of Judge Merrick Garland to fill the opening. As McConnell has explained on more than one occasion, that was because the Senate was of one party and the White House occupied by the other, not based upon any in principle opposition to having seats on the court filled during election years. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health issues included five bouts with cancer beginning in 1999, falls that resulted in broken ribs, insertion of a stent to clear a blocked artery, and assorted other hospitalizations after she turned 75. Now, the president has declared that he's going to announce his nominee for the court on Friday or Saturday, just a few days hence. I expect him to do just that. Two women, and he's already declared he's going to nominate a woman, which is certainly highly appropriate, are leading the list. Amy Coney Barrett, who's been a professor of law at Notre Dame, who has just a sterling intellectual, academic, and judicial record, has been heretofore widely believed to be leading the list. On one occasion, Trump even remarked to an aide that he was saving her to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. However, given contemporary political consideration, I believe another candidate has been reported rising in the White House calculation, Barbara Lagoa, a judge on the 11th Court of Appeals, just as Amy Coney Barrett is an appellate court judge as well. She is an appealing prospect since Trump believes nominating her would boost his reelection chances. She has a Cuban ancestry. Florida represents 28 electoral votes. It would be nice to seal the deal, and where I believe Trump's calculation would include the fact that in 2019, during her confirmation, she received 80 votes, 80 votes, count them, 80 votes. That means some around 30 Democrats were supporting her. It would be very awkward for them to suddenly reverse a vote in favor in 2019 to a vote against in 2020. I therefore believe that Donald Trump on Friday or Saturday will announce his nominee, and that notwithstanding her admirable qualities, it will not be Amy Coney Barrett, but Barbara Lagoa, who looks like the perfect candidate for the politics of the situation. Meanwhile, we've had lots of leaders react with sadness, shock, expressing their admiration of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I've got a collection here of sentiments shared by some of the nation's former and current officials, where Nancy Pelosi ordered Capitol Hill flags to be lowered to half staff, while a White House did the same. President Trump was first informed when he was leaving a rally in Bemidji, and someone in the crowd explained to him that she had died. His immediate reaction, wow, I didn't know that. You're telling me now, for the first time, she led an amazing life. What else can you say? She was an amazing woman, whether you agreed or not. She was an amazing woman who led an amazing life. I'm actually saddened to hear that. I'm saddened to hear that. All very appropriate. He was subsequently published a formal statement about her death that included the following. Renowned for her brilliant mind and her powerful dissents at the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg demonstrated that one can disagree without being disagreeable toward one's colleagues or different points of view. Her opinions, including well-known decisions regarding the legal equality of women and the disabled, have inspired all Americans and generations of great legal minds. Here we have a statement from Barack Obama. 60 years ago, Ruth Bader Ginsburg applied to be a Supreme Court clerk. She'd studied at two of our finest law schools and had ringing recommendations, but because she was a woman, she was rejected. 10 years later, she sent her first brief to the Supreme Court, which led it to strike down a state law based on gender discrimination for the first time. And then for nearly three decades, as the second woman ever to sit on the highest court in the land, she was a warrior for gender equality, someone who believed that equal justice under the law only had meaning if it applied to every single American. Completely appropriate. He also sent out a tweet showing him walking with Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the White House lawn with the following sentiment: Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought to the end through her cancer with unwavering faith in our democracy and its ideals. That's how we remember her. But she also left instructions on how she wanted her legacy to be honored. Meanwhile, we have Chief Justice John Roberts. Our nation has lost a jurist of historic stature. We at the Supreme Court have lost a cherished colleague. Today we mourn, but with confidence that future generations will remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as we knew her, a tireless and resolute champion of justice. Former President George W. Bush. Laura and I join our fellow Americans in mourning the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She dedicated many of her 87 remarkable years to the pursuit of justice and equality, and she inspired more than one generation of women and girls. Here's another, former President Bill Clinton. With the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, America has lost one of the most extraordinary jurists ever to serve on the Supreme Court. She was a magnificent judge and a wonderful person, a brilliant lawyer with a caring heart, common sense, fierce devotion to fairness and equality, and boundless courage in the face of her own adversity. All those, I think, were completely appropriate sentiments. But the Democrats were quick to respond to the politics of the situation. Joe Biden, their nominee, no matter his physical and mental handicaps, begged the GOP not to confirm a new justice, and Pelosi warned of impeachment, a bizarre claim given that presidents are entitled to make these appointments, and we can find Democrat after Democrat of the past who in the year 2016 were affirming the president's right and obligation to nominate a new member of the court, even though it was an election year. Joe Biden Sunday slammed President Trump and leading Senate Republicans for trying to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He urged more senators to stand with a pair of GOP colleagues who oppose the election season nomination. Trump has said he intends to name a woman within days to succeed the liberal icon. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was moving ahead swiftly with plans for confirmation hearings and votes. Just hours before Biden spoke, a second Republican senator, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, joined Senator Susan Collins of Maine in opposing efforts to fill Ginsburg's seat before the next presidential election. It takes four Republicans to break ranks to keep Trump's nominee off the court. Attention quickly focused on Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, who voted to convict Trump on one count of impeachment and undoubtedly will join them in opposition, and Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, former chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Biden acknowledged that those Republicans and others like them were his target audience when he warned that Trump's plan was an abuse of power when it is nothing of the kind. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, Dems must employ every possible obstacle to stop McConnell from replacing Ginsburg. While Mitch McConnell is among the most shrewd majority leaders ever to handle and manage the Senate, I would compare him to Lyndon Johnson for his complete mastery of the upper chamber. We have Ginsburg's own words firing back at Democrats who are threatening to pack the Supreme Court with liberal justices, which has been proposed by Chuck Schumer of New York to, in my opinion, his utter disgrace. Ruth Ginsburg said this about such an idea. Well, if anything would make the court appear partisan, then it would be that, without any question. Meanwhile, we have a cartoon, Donald Trump receiving a phone call in the middle of the night. So what is it that's so important it can't wait until morning? It's Hillary on the phone, and she tells the president, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Ginsburg just died, and I would very much like to take her place. To which Trump replies, well, it's all right with me if it's okay with a funeral home. I think that's very fitting, very appropriate. Meanwhile, Biden has been drawing miserable crowds out on the stump. It's a miracle to me that anyone turns out at all. When he, at the time that Trump came to Kenosha, there was a 5-mile-long crowd out to see him, whereas Biden at the same time was having a meeting in the backyard with 15 supporters. Here in Duluth, he drew a crowd of 200 on the campaign trail, his largest real audience since March when he was downtown in Duluth. But get this, when he actually had his meeting, it took place at the Carpenters Union Training Hall, where he emphasized his plans to boost American manufacturing. It's time to reward hard work in America, not wealth, Biden declared, with roughly a dozen workers looking on, yes, a dozen, at his campaign rally in Duluth. Meanwhile, in Bemidji, 46 days from now, we're going to win Minnesota, and we're going to win 4 more years in the White House, Trump told thousands of supporters at the regional airport in Bemidji. I think that's a very realistic comparison here. Trump is drawing thousands, while Biden can barely scrape together a dozen. Meanwhile, a new national poll shows Donald Trump leading nationwide 47-46. That may not sound like a significant lead, but it's more proof of Trump's momentum. In the same poll last week, Biden was up by 48-46. The week before, Biden was up 49-45. That's a steady 5-point total shift in Trump's direction over 2 weeks. Meanwhile, in Rasmussen's daily tracking poll, Trump now enjoys a 52% job approval rating compared to 46% who disapproves. That puts him 6 points above water after a dismal summer that saw those numbers reversed and worse at times. A good for faith search of Trump's disapproval rating shows that 46% might be his lowest in this particular poll. The same time during his failed presidency, Barack Obama only had a 50% approval rating, And of course, that overall approval rating tends to be a harbinger of an election victory in a re-election campaign. Meanwhile, we're getting similar support for Trump, even in Oregon, where the majority are describing the protests as violent, where Trump's popularity is topping that of local leaders. I think this is significant. A poll in Oregon of Oregon voters released late last week revealed a majority disapprove of the Black Lives Matter protests in the state, and that President Donald Trump has a higher approval than Governor Kate Brown or Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. I find this all completely appropriate and reflective of the reality on the ground. The poll conducted online by the nonpartisan DHM Research showed that nearly two-thirds of Oregon voters disapprove of the protests in Portland, which have stretched beyond 100 straight nights last week. Contrary to claims by Democrats, including former Vice President Joe Biden, that the protests have been mostly peaceful, a majority of Oregon voters, 56%, believe the protests in the state have been mostly violent. A similar majority, 55%, felt the word riot should be used to describe the protests rather than protests, 37%. And 42% believe police in Portland have not used enough force, compared to 29% who thought police had used too much. Unbelievable, though it may seem, Trump has the higher percentage have approved of Trump's response, 39% compared to 37% for Brown and 30% for Wheeler, though the difference between Trump and Brown was within the poll's 4.4% margin of error. Meanwhile, a political science professor who has correctly called five of the last six presidential elections says Trump will win in a landslide. Trump will win in a landslide, says Helmut Norpoth, a political science professor at Stony Brook University, who's correctly predicted the outcome of five of the past six presidential elections. Northrop's model, in fact, gives President Trump a whopping 90% chance of being reelected. Norpoth's primary model has correctly predicted nearly every presidential election since 1996, missing only George Bush's 2000 victory over Al Gore, which, of course, was, you know, manipulated, where the Supreme Court, in a great blot on its history, favored George Bush over Al Gore and did not allow the recount to continue, whereas a national consortium of newspapers went about investigating and discovered had all the votes been counted, Al Gore would have been elected president. Because of the occurrence of 9/11, which was really the primary impetus for Bush and Cheney to steal the election, they, in the interest of national unity, didn't publish their results. The presser said it was unsurprising at his model's prediction this year, citing Trump's performance in the primary earlier in the winter. When I looked at New Hampshire and I saw that Donald Trump had 85% of the vote, I was pretty sure what the model was going to predict. Joe Biden, on the other hand, pulled down only 8.4% in New Hampshire. Northrop said a number that is unbelievable for a candidate with any aspirations of becoming president. He described his focus on primaries as a key difference between his model and others. It's all about primary elections, which are real electoral contests, and the votes are counted and tabulated, he said. I also use real numbers, such as the results of previous elections, which indicate whether the pendulum is swinging away from or toward the White House party. This is something that also relies on real election results and not any kind of an opinion poll. Unlike many other projections, his equation ignores approval ratings. That's a poll number, he said, and I don't use those. I think the primary performance of a city president is usually a proxy for that, but I don't use any polling data or data related to opinions. In July, Norpoth appeared on Lou Dobbs' Fox Business News show, where he explained his presidential election model to the host and how it predicted President Trump would win by 91%. That, I take it, meaning with 91% probability or confidence, not that he was expected to take 91% of the vote. But I'm telling you, I believe Donald Trump is going to take at least 40 states. The electoral votes of at least 40 states. I believe it could easily be as high as 49. And given what I'm hearing being reported from California, where Californians have been especially abused by the Democrats running their state, I think it's even possible that Trump could carry California. This would be a devastating defeat for the Democrats, and I think well reflect the public's contempt for the Democrats, who have been unwilling to address urban violence all 4 days of their national convention. It remained unaddressed, and where they've been covertly and overtly favoring Antifa and Black Lives Matter, supporting looting and rioting, which is a cause of great distress to most Americans across the land, and which I believe has already sealed the deal for Donald Trump. The effect of the nomination actually is going to be beneficial by taking the coronavirus issue off of the front burner and replacing it with debate about the nomination to the court, which, while it's going to motivate Democrats, they've had a huge surge because of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but it's going to prove to be too little too late. I believe this is all but sealing the deal for President Trump. Now, because of the opposition of the Republican Senate members, I am not predicting that a vote will take place before the election, but rather I expect it to take place afterwards, all the more of an incentive for those who support the president to get out and vote, especially conservatives who have long wanted this event to take place, and where in the unlikely circumstance that Biden were to win, it would be a marvelous consolation prize for Trump supporters, because the vote would then take place in the aftermath. I'll be right back after the break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to be back for a new Monday edition of the show to continue with the latest developments in the news. Hosting Netanyahu, Trump says five or six more countries are ready to make peace with Israel. I think this is a timely development, although I've been highly critical of Trump's moves to benefit Israel in the past, including, of course, moving the American embassy to Jerusalem, inappropriate, because the status of Jerusalem as an international city needs to be part of a comprehensive Israeli-Palestinian settlement. I've also opposed his declaration of the Golan Heights to be a property of Israel. The rest of the world recognizes the Golan Heights to be Israeli-occupied Syrian territory, and where the discovery of a huge natural gas deposit makes it all the more important that it belong to the state to which it is legally entitled, Syria, rather than Israel. He defunded the UN organization responsible for providing refugee aid to the Palestinians. That, too, I found deplorable. He has even, by executive order, redefined anti-Semitism to include criticism of the actions or policies of the government of Israel. That is completely wrong. If the Democrats had wanted to impeach Donald Trump, that is such a glaring violation of the First Amendment, that might have been a suitable project to undertake, but not their points about the Ukraine conversation, with respect to which nothing was wrong. And now we see here a photograph on the balcony of the White House with the leaders of the Ukraine, the United Arab Emirates, Israel, and the President of the United States, where Trump has observed, we'll have at least five or six countries coming along very quickly. They want to see peace. They've been fighting for a long time. They're warring countries, but they're tired of fighting. You're going to see a lot of very great activity. It's going to be peace in the Middle East. He stressed that most of the countries in the Middle East want to sign this deal. Answering questions about what Israel gets from the new deal, Trump said, we'll be signing up other nations. These are very strong agreements. This is serious peace. What Israel gets, the most important thing Israel gets, is peace. Very significant. The Palestinians, he added, will be a member at the right time. We're talking to the Palestinians. At the right time, they'll be joining us too. Asked about Netanyahu's West Bank annexation plans, which I think is deplorable, Trump said, we don't want to talk about that right now. That's working out very fair for the people who are coming in and for Israel, but that troubles me quite a lot. Meanwhile, Trump has confessed he wanted to assassinate Bashar al-Assad, who is the democratically elected president of Syria, but Mattis, then Secretary of State, stopped him as well he should. It is a violation of executive orders signed by three presidents that America cannot assassinate the leaders of foreign nations, which is the reason why George Bush's attempt to celebrate the death of Saddam Hussein was cut short, we suspect, by Donald Rumsfeld, since if he had made that declaration aboard the USS Lincoln off the coast of San Diego, he would have been acknowledging that he himself was in violation of the law, which is why the whole event was so muted and confusing and unsuccessful. Meanwhile, the Trump campaign has been called out for alleged anti-Semitism over an anti-Bernie Sanders ad using Nazi imagery. It's very curious. The new ad, paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, features Bernie Sanders, one of the U.S. most prominent Jewish politicians, holding the strings of a puppet with a Democratic presidential nominee's face superimposed upon it. A caption next to the image reads, "The Radical Left's Puppet," where the ad has been confirmed as real by the Daily Beast. The ad, which began its campaign on Tuesday the 15th, has a potential reach between 100,000 and 500,000, according to Facebook's ad library. The depiction of a powerful Jewish person as a puppet master pulling the strings of world affairs behind the scenes is one of the oldest and most prominent anti-Semitic tropes, which dates back at least to the 18th century. That description, of course, presumes it's false rather than justifiable. I do think there's an oddity here, I shall clarify. Last month, Facebook updated its hate speech guidelines to ban on its site depictions of Jewish people running the world or controlling major institutions such as media networks, the economy, or the government. Evidently, even if it is true, I have, for example, a panel showing 100 executives from CNN, each of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of which is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another panel from the New York Times showing 100 of its executives, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. So it appears even if Jewish people are running major institutions such as media networks, Facebook won't allow you to present that evidence to the public. Meanwhile, it seems to me this is a highly misleading ad because of featuring Bernie Sanders in this role. Bernie Sanders has expressed his distress over his failure to be able to influence the campaign platform or the candidacy in relation to the Democratic campaign. Bernie Sanders has once again been marginalized. He's hardly the puppet master. Instead, that role falls to another prominent Jewish political figure, namely George Soros. And indeed, it appears that it was George Soros' son who selected Kamala Harris to be Joe Biden's running mate. Embarrassingly bad, where he reported having called his father for his confirmation of his pick. So it's really not Bernie Sanders who's the puppet master of Joe Biden. Rather, it's George Soros. But of course, Facebook would prevent the publication of that information, even though it's more accurate than an ad that is showing Bernie Sanders in that role. Meanwhile, emails have revealed that Asheville's mayor's office colluded with Metro Health to hide the actual COVID numbers from citizen business owners because they were so low. Even though Nashville has thousands of employees in the restaurant and bar business, the number they came up with so tiny, so minuscule, exactly 20, 2-0, that they sought to conceal it from the public. This email was sent by the mayor's senior advisor to health department officials on July 30th. They hid the low numbers from their constituents and replied back, "This isn't going to be publicly released, right?" How bad is that? Nashville Mayor John Cooper put thousands of bar and restaurant workers out of work, destroyed the national economy by hiding these numbers. This is absolute lawlessness. I think they ought to be run out of office. There ought to be a recall. I could see it happening that they'd been strung up by a rope from the nearest lamppost. This is completely outrageous. Meanwhile, the Nashville mayor shut down the 4th of July celebrations, but allowed Black Lives Matter to protest America on Independence Day. That is disgraceful. Fox 17 broke the story on Mayor John Cooper's fraudulent practices. Here's a tweet about it. Emails between the mayor's senior advisor and the health department reveal only a partial picture. What they reveal, however, is disturbing. The discussion involves the low number of coronavirus cases emerging from bars and restaurants and how to keep it from the public. This is a nice indication of how the Democrats have been playing the coronavirus for its ostensive political benefits by shutting down the American economy to deprive Donald Trump of his greatest strength going into re-election, namely the surging economy and the towering stock market, which has even been setting new records in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. Coronavirus hysteria is back dominating the headlines, where I'm observing now that it's being wiped off the front page by controversy about the Supreme Court appointment in the wake of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. There's one chart that they, the power-hungry politicians and the mainstream media, however, don't want you to see. This image created with official CDC data shows that COVID-related deaths are nearly back to pre-pandemic levels. So why all the hysteria? That's because, of course, the Democrats believe it's beneficial to their prospects. It's not going to work. Here we have further confirmation, however, of their attempts to manipulate. Fauci spills the beans. The vaccine won't end COVID-19 restrictions. Dr. Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci just spilled the beans. Contrary to the implicit promise numerous politicians have made that COVID-19 restrictions would only last until there's an effective vaccine, Fauci now says the arrival of a vaccine won't mean life will return to normal, perhaps for more than a year. And then, of course, they can extend it for another year and then another. If you're talking about getting back to a degree of normalcy that resembles where we were prior to COVID, it's going to be well into 2021, maybe even toward the end of 2021, said the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases on Friday. A safe and effective vaccine produced this quickly would be a stunning scientific accomplishment that would save thousands of lives. But Fauci warned that widespread distribution and getting the majority or more of the population vaccinated and protected won't happen until perhaps the end of 2021, and therefore means we cannot be free from oppressive lockdown measures until at least that point. It's completely disgusting. Aside from Fauci being a reliable harbinger for politicians moving the COVID-19 goalposts again and again, we have three very good reasons to doubt the understanding promoted by politicians so far about returning to normal when a vaccine is deployed. First, politicians already moved the goalposts far away from flattening the curve in 15 days to slow the spread and thus cannot be trusted. Second, they've ignored their promise of reopening if effective treatments were found and, of course, participated in suppressing the immediately available cheap cure of hydroxychloroquine, which would have saved lives from the beginning, where Fauci has known this since 2005, which means that nobody had to die. Third, the newly discovered phenomenon of COVID-19 reinfection, which I think is more unmitigated bullshit, gives panic pushers an excuse to keep lockdown measures until some new target of vaccine efficiency or compliance is met. In short, we have every reason to believe Fauci might be understating the persistence of lockdown measures and there's almost no reason to believe any of his or others' political promises. Meanwhile, a sign of sanity, the Big Ten has reversed itself and voted to bring back college football during the pandemic. I'm very happy about this. Big Ten Council of Presidents and Chancellors announced Wednesday, after a unanimous vote, the conference's football season will resume on the weekend of October 23-24. The announcement follows reports that a proposal had been approved for the league to resume play in a hot mic moment from the University of Nebraska's president, suggesting that an announcement was imminent. Each school will play 8 games in a 9-week window, with a league title game tentatively set for December 19th. The decision on whether fans will be able to attend will likely be left up to individual schools. The Big Ten statement announcing the resumed play indicates student athletes, coaches, trainers, and anyone else on the field for practice and games will undergo daily antigen testing for COVID-19. The decision to play was reportedly made after hours of deliberation Sunday afternoon in cooperation with the Big Ten Return to Competition Task Force, headed by Barry Alvarez, who's the director of athletics here at the University of Madison, of Wisconsin-Madison. A team of medical experts established rules and procedures to maintain the health and safety of the teams. Meanwhile, we know the bombshell report that up to 90% of COVID-19 positive test results are false, where test kits are matching dead viral fragments that pose no infection risk. Indeed, anyone who's ever had a cold, because the cold virus is in the coronavirus family, is likely to test positive, not meaning that they have the virus, just meaning they once had a cold. It's that bad. Meanwhile, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, sometimes referred to as occasional Cortex, confident the radical left can push Biden in a more progressive direction. We actually learned earlier from Angela Davis that the reason the progressive was supporting Biden was not because Joe Biden was the best candidate. Obviously, he's cognitively impaired, far from the best. We've even had a report from a former staff member that he is in the early stages of dementia, and that the dementia medication they're giving him has the unfortunate side effect of making him incontinent. So they're having staff meetings over what type of adult diaper he ought to wear, the one that is least visible to the public through his clothing and makes the least crinkling sound when he urinates, so that I confidently predict next time we see Joe Biden, it's liable to be in a Depends commercial broadcast on television, for which he appears to be eminently qualified. What we're hearing from Ocasio-Cortez echoes what Angela Davis said. Biden is not the best qualified, but he's the one we believe is most amenable to pressure to promote the progressive agenda, once again indicating Bernie Sanders' failure to have any influence or exercise over the choice of the vice presidential nominee or the platform of the party. Meanwhile, at a Florida roundtable event, Biden, displaying his cognitive incompetence, rambles about the second floor of the ladies' department. This is embarrassingly bad. At one point of the sparsely attended events, I see maybe 6 persons there in total, Biden began to ramble about the ladies' department. You know, the thing. Here's what he actually said. This is a quote. "Because if you could take care, if you were a quartermaster, you can sure in hell take care running a, you know, a department store thing, you know where, in the second floor of the ladies' department or whatever. You know what I mean," Biden said. Got it? How bad is this? Embarrassingly bad. Meanwhile, on another occasion, Biden has slipped up and referred to the Harris-Biden administration. During a campaign speech on Tuesday, Democratic nominee for President Joe Biden seemed to forget who's running for what, referring to his ticket as the Harris-Biden administration. He made the verbal slip in Tampa, Florida, while attempting to attract Latino voters and military members disappointed with President Trump. It makes it so much harder for military spouses to find good jobs and build their careers, Biden said. That has to change. A Harris-Biden administration is going to relaunch that effort and keep pushing it further to make it easier for military spouses and veterans to find meaningful careers. It's that bad. Meanwhile, a Milwaukee Trump supporter has been arrested for brandishing a gun as a Black Lives Matter mob was surrounding his home. This is entirely lawful and legal and appears to reflect the success that George Soros has had in financing progressive candidates for local district attorney offices that we've seen result in absurd issuances of arrest warrants and indictments, as in St. Louis, when the two lawyers brandished weapons when a mob came onto their property, threatened to burn down their home and kill their dog, or in Kenosha, where Kyle Rittenhouse was being indicted for first-degree murder when he shot and killed two BLM supporters who were trying to kill him and wounded a third who had a gun in his hand, who had admitted later to a friend his only regret was that he hesitated shooting Kyle to take him out. I mean, this is absurd beyond belief. Members of the mob claimed on social media their actions were justified because he's a racist and had a Confederate flag. No flag was seen in the videos, but an American and Trump flag were hanging prominently on the front of his home. I doubt very much they can tell the difference between a Confederate flag and a Trump flag. They are dumb as a post. These are political idiots who are clearly stooges for the extreme left of the Democratic Party, where it's way too late for Biden and Harris to denounce rioting and looting. They had all 4 days of the Democratic National Convention, and not once did they talk about the threat of urban violence, which, in my opinion, has sealed the deal for the president to be reelected. Meanwhile, the judge has thrown the book at rioters and hit him with $1 million bail. A clearly fed-up judge from Pennsylvania just threw the book at some rioters, hitting them with a whopping $1 million bail after they allegedly violently protested the police shooting of a knife-wielding man in Lancaster. 12 adults and one juvenile were arrested by Lancaster police officers at around 3 a.m. Monday, according to Fox News. This came after a chaos ensued following the Sunday afternoon death of Ricardo Munoz, a mentally ill 27-year-old man who was caught on body cam footage charging at an officer with a knife, leaving the officer no choice but to shoot him. This is a very appropriate attitude. Meanwhile, after vowing to abolish the police, the Minneapolis City Council is demanding to know, where are the police as violence plagues the city? This is a great reason why Trump is going to take even Minnesota, what the anti-cop movement brings with it. After the tragic but fake death of George Floyd rocked the nation, the Minneapolis City Council, composed of nearly all Democrats, took the lead in the anti-police movement, voting to defund the city's police department. The council sought to replace traditional law enforcement with newer community-based alternative forms of policing. But as violent crime has plagued the city for months, the city council is now asking, where are the police? As The Blaze reported, the Minneapolis City Council passed a resolution in June to replace a city's police department with an alternative community safety model. The development came days after the council promised anti-police residents they would completely dismantle the city's police force. Residents are asking, where are the police? Councilman Jamal Osman said, this is the only public safety option they have at the moment, the Minneapolis Police Department. They rely on the Minneapolis Police Department, and they're saying they are nowhere to be seen. Council President Lisa Bender one of the loudest anti-police voices just months ago, claimed the police are being defiant. This is not news, she claimed. Meanwhile, Felipe Cunningham chided his colleagues for looking to the police for solutions when they called for the police department's abolition just a few months ago. What I am sort of flabbergasted by right now is colleagues who a very short time ago were calling for abolition, now suggesting we should put more resources into funding the Minneapolis Police Department. Before we take the break, I want to play at least part of a fascinating political ad showing gays who might be expected to be supporting the Democrats supporting Donald Trump after a violent confrontation in Beverly Hills. Listen up. This is wonderful, and I celebrate it as a patriotic gesture. Here you go. On August 22nd, a violent Black Lives Matter mob swarmed the Trump Unity Bridge in Beverly Hills. But the Trump Unity Bridge responded to Black Lives Matter with a dance-off to their unifying theme song, MAGA to YMCA. Listen.
Walk away from the hate. We're all human. And we don't segregate.
Just like men. Help make America great.
We are all in this together.
Our colors are red, white, and blue.
And they stand for
every one of you.
And together,
here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make
America great.
Woo!
Everybody sing.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio, Studio A, for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Fourth, I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the phone number for those who'd like to call in and express their opinion, and you're welcome to take exception or contest anything I've had to say. You're welcome to give your argument for your opinion, is 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will take your call. He may or may not have to call you back. But I'm really pleased to have his assistance in bringing you this new Monday edition of The Raw Deal. I'm very pleased that we have our first caller, Giuseppe, my friend. Please step right up to the plate.
Hello, Professor. I couldn't let you start a new show without making an appearance so you have somebody to talk to.
I'm absolutely delighted to have you here, my friend, and we're having such a joyful time with our new Need to Know series. I can't thank you enough for inducing me to keep the ball rolling with daily political updates. And you have been a sensational compliment. You not only got it going, but you're keeping it going. And I just can't tell you how profoundly I appreciate your efforts.
Well, I'm truly honored to participate. I've been a fan of yours for over a decade and have followed your prodigious work. And I never intended to really get back into the public square, the mass media again. I did it when I was a young man. But it's just so outrageous, this globalist multi-prong attack on our basic quality of life, our basic freedoms, trying to destroy the sovereign nation of the United States and turn us into some despicable communist North American Union participant where we're all controlled by a handful of truly despicable satanic parasites. And I'm like, well, you know what? I got to jump into this. So, you know, it was weird how that whole thing went down with Dean Ryan and Mike Barra with their handling of Millie Weaver's documentary and Millie Weaver's career growth. And then they blamed you. Well, we've covered all that, but you know, really, I had no intentions of doing anything like this, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm honored. And I just finished up editing our today's show, and just processing it now. And it's getting better and better. We have such a good stable of second commentators now with Susan Bradford and Michael Ivey, and tomorrow we'll debut the great Rebecca Carnes and David Scorpio once he can settle his technical issues in Ecuador with his Mac computer, and Zoom is coming on board. So this is really turning out well, and in my opinion, so much better than the Real Deal News, which was like a vanity project for those two.
Well, I don't want to belabor it. Anyone who wants to trace the history of this whole matter can go to JimTheConspiracyGuy.com, because I did three shows with Danny Siras, who has an extensive law enforcement background, about the stunning content of her Shadowgate video. You find the whole program there with our commentary. Then it turned out that the interviews that were being done by Pete Santilli, with whom I've had differences in the past, but in this case he was absolutely sensational, include some revelation that are at least as stunning as what we had in the Shadowgate. And then in part three, yes, I actually devoted a total of three different shows to this. We took up the whole fiasco with the Real Deal Report. And I got to say now, it's clear to me that what they have there is a fan club for Mike Barra and Dean Ryan. And I wish them well, but they far departed from the standards that are appropriate if you're doing serious coverage of the news. I'm delighted to see that Paul has joined us, Giuseppe. So I want Paul to come into the conversation. I'm delighted you're here, Paul.
Who?
May I take my usual seat down at the end of the bar, please?
Of course.
So I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, Professor.
Well,
I was just thinking the other day how, you know, I'm getting some of your phrases down, and I've made some notes in the past. So meanwhile is a phrase. Also, here we have further confirmation. I'm really starting to get familiar with that, and actually it's quite useful. I will take issue with your comment about the Big Ten as a sign of sanity. Yeah, if it's the type of sanity that makes the cash register ring and pad the pockets of people, then yeah, okay, it was a move of sanity. But I am sure you are completely sick and weary of the wreck that they've made of sports. It's like these people can't resist taking something that is in many cases pure and beautiful in the competitiveness and tradition in terms of being American. Nothing is more American than college football. And then they can't resist turning it into a big turd. It makes me so damn angry. But anyway.
Well, I have longstanding ties here. Wisconsin Madison was the only school my daughter even applied to, the only one she'd consider. She had early acceptance, which I was gratified by. So she didn't have to go through any anxiety. Both my daughter and son-in-law are graduates of UW-Madison. I have had a longstanding friend who was on the faculty there. Unfortunately, just as I moved down to Madison, looking forward to spending a lot of time with him, he passed on from an excess of alcoholism. It's a real sad story because the guy was quite brilliant. But with regard to Big Ten football, I do think college football is one of the only pure sports that remain. In fact, college athletics are overwhelmingly preferable to professional, virtually all of which appear to be rigged. I have a longtime correspondent who could regularly predict the outcome of NFL games before they were even played based on the Las Vegas betting line, Paul. Now, what I like about the Big Ten decision is it really helps to give opportunity for some relaxation and enjoyment for the public, which needs it massively. I think it's no coincidence that Trump wanted to take some credit here, because the Big Ten states are among the most important to his reelection, including Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. So I regard this as a good move, both for the sake of the sport itself, but also politically. I think it's going to have additional benefits. I very much expect and want this guy to be reelected, and by a comfortable margin. So there's going to be no room for debating over mail-in ballots, which is clearly, they've already signaled that's going to be the strategy. Paul, go ahead and give a rebuttal, and then we'll go back to Giuseppe.
Well, on all the things you just said, not much of a rebuttal. I grew up, I think I believe about 14 years older than me, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, we know what America was like back in the 60s and the 70s and into the 80s. You know, it was much more normal and more natural than it is now. It's just become extremely weird and strange in so many ways. I think you can attest to that. And just the fact that you have a show and you talk about the things that you talk about. I mean, on the one hand, it, gives you something to do because, probably like a lot of people, what most people do when they're retired is not that attractive. But on the other hand, we should never, ever have to deal with or discuss some of the things that we are. And why is that? It's because a certain group, a certain malevolent group has it in for us. So that's my brief statement for now.
Well, I think you're basically right. Mitchell is suggesting three words: worldwide color revolution under the guise of a pandemic. I think he's got it basically right. And Mitchell, by the way, you're welcome to join the conversation. In addition, I'm so grateful to you for being so steadfast in producing my shows. Your thoughts, Mitchell?
Oh, yeah. Sunday morning was pretty active, I guess. I was producing Michael J. We got you all locked in and set up. And then about 12 o'clock, I started passing a kidney stone. And I was at the VA hospital. We got home about 11:45 last night. So
that's
yeah.
not fun. That is not fun.
Yeah, it's been... it's been hell year for Mitchell. But, you know, we are looking at a worldwide color revolution, because if you expand that idea and you look at all the reformations of governments that were claimed to be, you know, democratic, have essentially turned out to be tyrannical, and they've really turned the screws down. So
yeah,
it is a
right.
color revolution.
Giuseppe, come back in, my friend.
Well, both Paul and Mitchell and yourself nail it the nail on the head, which is you've got these satanic globalist parasites whom Henry Ford in 1920 saw what was going on 100 years ago and labeled them the internationalist Jew, and paid some excellent journalists of the day to put out hundreds of newspapers detailing and great informational sharing what they were up to and their antics. And now, sadly, the internationalist Jew is like a malignancy. They now control the Ford Corporation. They now control the Ford Foundation. I mean, Henry is probably rolling over in his grave seeing what's going on. And sadly, as we all know, there's two, it's called the kosher sandwich, two slices of the kosher sandwich. You have on the left side of the two slices, the Zionist, globalist, capitalist, parasitical capitalism, not free market capitalism. And they are driving the bus as far as usury and just stealing hundreds of trillions of dollars annually from the world, the various countries of the world. And on the right side, that slice of the coaster sandwich, that slice of bread, is the communist Bolshevik lie of, oh, communism, the workers will revolt, we'll all be equal. And really all it does is it destroys any autonomy of the nation, any rights and freedoms of the people, and creates this boot on the neck of the individual citizen in every communist country, which has always been driven by the internationalist Jew, ends up killing millions of people in their reign. So it's like, it's sad because really there aren't that many of them, but the power they wield is enormous, and they literally control this planet right now.
Paul, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, because just this morning I was listening to an audio of the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. I found this great site too, which is just a fantastic aggregator of all kinds of videos, and including so many of them that have been taken down from YouTube and so many different categories. But I just happened upon this thing. It's like 3 hours and change, and a guy is just reading aloud the protocols, and I listened for about 10 or 15 minutes, and you know, I took some notes as usual, and it's just amazing. I mean, just hearing the first 4 to 5 minutes of essentially the introduction, it's just like a bell of clarity of what's going on today. And I remember the quote, I believe, that Henry Ford himself made when he was asked about the protocols, and essentially Henry Ford said that the only comment he cared to make is that they fit in with what was happening today. Now, of course, he said that back in the 20s. And when you see exactly what they're doing here, what they've done in other places, it's just amazing how it's a formula. They stick to it. And anytime the Jews start to champion the underclass, the disgruntled underachievers, the less than optimal functioners in society, you know you have problems. And that's why, in my opinion, the only viable solution is complete and total separation or expulsion from these people, with just some sort of ironclad, unforgiving constitution that they never, ever are allowed to inhabit anything but their own society, which has to be guarded.
And you know, history tends to vindicate or validate that attitude. I mean, they've been excluded from over 100 nations in the course of human history. It's just astonishing. It's like the pattern of homicides in relation to gun ownership worldwide. The greater gun ownership, the lower the homicide rate. And here you have a similar parallel phenomenon. I mean, this is a historical, and I find it very difficult to debate or challenge. I mean, if this many nations over this period of time arrived at the same conclusion, it's difficult to deny that there must be something to it. Giuseppe.
Okay. I was going to say.
Go ahead, Paul. I can wait.
Well, I was just going to impart a little funny note at the end, and it can be partly explained by my genealogy. I just, for everybody on the show, I thought I would take this time to announce, I just got my results back from 23andMe, and to no one's surprise, I am 70% German, 50% Waffen-SS, 40% Gestapo, and 20% Prussian nobility.
Jeez, so I did.
Wow, adds up to 100%.
Explains who I am. I'm sorry, I can't help it.
That's funny.
My life matters.
Just happy.
You know, talking about Henry Ford and his revelations 100 years ago, it seems to me that the internationalist Jew really feared the great masses of the population because the politicians were serving the masses up until about 1980. And then they got some of the rules changed as far as lobbying, as far as donations to campaigns and politics. And all of a sudden, they realized that they didn't have to fear the general public anymore. They could control the government, and they rolled out their control of the media industrial complex. It with the institution of the movie Wall Street, where greed is good, and ever since then, it's been an increasing effort to get the general American to be more focused on Panem et Kirkensis, bread and circuses, and celebrity instruction and media spectacle and pro sports and movies and TV and now the internet and games, these entrancing games. And what's occurred is that because the average person no longer can process what's really going on, the machinations in Washington, D.C., the machinations of switching from a physical economy, we were once the world's manufacturing leader, to a service economy and a gambling economy. Wall Street is now the biggest casino on the planet. And they can't figure it out, so they don't try anymore. So they just assume that they can vote in a vote every 4 years in a beauty contest, which is the presidential election, and that'll somehow make a difference. And every 4 years, one or both of the candidates runs like, I'm going to change things. I'm the agent of change. I'm the outsider, when they're never the outsider. They're never the agent of change, and nothing ever changes. And it's just astonishing that they've succeeded so amazingly and effectively. Even though I despise them and would revel in the idea to remove them all from this planet, I can't help but admire their precision, their ruthless precision in achieving their goals.
Hey, Giuseppe, you know, it's like Kevin Kleinsmith. It's same change. You know, like making, you know, this lawyer speak happen for the, you know, the political class out here. Absolutely. You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and you know, it's sad that anybody, you know, passes away, and you know, she was a great opponent and proponent of, you know, a lot of liberal lifestyles. And you know, this call for this wait on a replacement is, you know, it's sour grapes and unconstitutional, as words have come out in Democrats' mouths in 2016. So, you know, they really kind of, you know, it's like Harry Reid, you know, removing the 60 vote limit to end a filibuster. You know, that Harry Reid did that. So, you know, in the end, the Democrats cut their own throat. In the end, the Democrats cut their own throat when they went after Trump for what? For saying he grabbed someone's wussy. You know, and they're talking about groupies that throw themselves at famous people. Without, you know, liberals lost their ass when they tried to fool with the coronavirus and say, oh, no, we're going to have you know, go into Chinatown and shake hands and kiss and hug as Pelosi did, and in New York. And then now they're trying to walk that back. You know, all the attacks on Donald Trump have exposed the Democrats, you know, duplicity in this duopoly, because no, no. It's a duopoly, and it's just, you know, one circle jerk to the other. So,
hey, Mitch, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What would you rather do? Would you rather pass another kidney stone, or would you rather see Kamala Harris sworn in after Joe Biden has a stroke?
I'll pass one from each kidney
That's a toughie. We have another caller from the 619 area code. Please give us your name and your state and join the conversation.
Hey, guys. This is Scott in California.
Hey, great.
I just got a question about this frustrating term, mostly peaceful. You know, a shark is mostly peaceful. It was mostly peaceful. A lion is mostly peaceful when you stand in front of them. What the hell does that mean? Mostly peaceful. Yeah, they're peaceful until they're not.
deliberate effort to put a favorable face on a terrible and destructive situation. They're just grossly misrepresenting. It's technically in critical thinking, it's the informal fallacy known as special pleading, only citing the evidence favorable to your side. Just you've given perfect parallels. I'd give you an A+ in class for your argument here. It's exactly right.
It's it's probably not analogous to, but it's along my line of thinking. It's similar to, oh, it's only skin color. You know, it's kind of like, all right, but that's not the whole story here. I had that thought. Go on, Scott.
this notion that the they're peaceful and then they're hijacked from outsiders. You know, I mean, isn't it obvious that the supposedly peaceful ones are just there to give cover to the anarchists?
Does anybody really buy this crap? Everything you're saying is spot on, it seems to me. Go ahead. Yeah, Paul?
Well, I was going to say, I have some observations for Scott. I was going to actually mention them earlier. All you guys will probably see what I'm saying immediately, but it just occurred to me today. I may have read something like this because I've read so many similar things, but the idea was just in my mind this morning as I was chewing this over, how brilliant it was to have started these riots, because they accomplished a number of things. So if you recall, within a week or two of them happening, I called into your show, Jim, and I mentioned the fact that it was very quickly on the heels of white men with guns showing up at various state capitals in sometimes significant numbers, that they dropped the whole St. George of fentanyl, thank you, Giuseppe, masquerade on them, right? And it completely diverted that train, which, in my opinion, was building momentum. And then I've also, like I said this morning, thought about the fact of how brilliant it was that these riots are being used, because if anybody should be rioting, right, it should be us, about what they're doing and continuing to do and how they're not going to let go of this. And they're just going to keep ramping it up and moving the goalposts. And you think about it, okay, we should be the ones that are, like, you know, attacking, burning down, like, state capitals and courthouses and things like that, you know, attacking the structure of government, because there is something to be gained from that. But instead, it's just a bunch of pointless, stupid kids, right? Many of them misguided, but also colossally dumb, as well as, you know, disgruntled minorities who, you know, are unhappy with their lot in life most of the time because of the media has put it in their heads. And they're doing completely despicable things, such as trying to pull white people from their cars, trying to get white people to say Black Lives Matter, you know, in many cases, assaulting and beating white people on YouTube videos, right? So this is a complete and total takeover of what may have been or could have been us, the majority still in this country, taking matters into our own hands, which I still believe is going to be necessary sooner or later. So anyway.
Well, I think you underestimate. They've used the coronavirus to get criminals out of prison, release them because of the alleged threat, which is minimal, to put them on the front lines of Black Lives Matter. I mean, look at Kyle Rittenhouse. He was assaulted by three individuals with extensive criminal records, embarrassingly bad. We got a break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad.
Don't let yourself be played. Read American Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with a new Monday episode of the show. And I'm just delighted to be back with Revolution Radio. Scott, I think you had some thoughts you wanted to add about our previous conversation before the break.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, it seems like we have a clear decision here, and don't get me wrong, I think Trump is a buffoon, but I mean, if Biden gets in, the thugs in the streets are going to have full federal government backing and support, and, you know, if Trump gets in, maybe he'll squash it. I don't know. What, you know, we're in a real tough spot here, man.
Well, let others respond, but I think Trump's, on the contrary, some kind of political genius. The idea that he could execute a hostile takeover of the Republican Party and remodel it in his own fashion and defeat 17 other candidates, bring us the most soaring economy the world's ever seen, have two Supreme Court appointees already, and another when everything has been thrown against him. I think you grossly underestimate the man. But you're, of course, entitled to your opinion. Giuseppe, your thoughts?
I hope you're right.
I think Donald Trump pulled a remarkable corporate-like takeover of the Republican Party, and I think he never really expected to win, and so that's why he wasn't really geared up to have the kind of people supporting him in his cabinet that he really needed, and he was forced to turn to the Republican arm of the deep state. And he's like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest right now. He's constantly trying to deflect all of the attacks from the deep state, from the globalists, and yet he's also obliged to the internationalist Jew because they bailed him out of four different bankruptcies, and no less than one of the Federal Reserve bankers said, well, we could have taken Donald Trump down, but we believe he'd be useful to us. So he's got a lot of skeletons in his closet, and yet somehow he managed to keep us out of a war with Iran with only the token rocket attack against Syria. He's managed to do a lot of things, and you know, I don't envy his position. So I don't think he's a buffoon. I think he's just in a real insane position that I don't believe he ever expected him he would be in.
Paul, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, I tend more towards what Jim said, but it's only and going that direction. I am exactly like everybody else here. We're sitting in a theater and we're watching what might unfold. But it's worth noting, and I agree, Trump is not a buffoon. He's a very shrewd guy, and we just have to be careful. You know, what is it that we're seeing? So what I started to say, it's worth noting how Ron Paul was basically run out of, you know, the presidential election. And it was clear that he had won more primaries and he was going to win more when all of a sudden he decided to, quote, drop out. It's also worth noting that multiple, I think at least two different elections, somebody like Ralph Nader, who was polling at large enough numbers to have qualified for the debate, was not even allowed into the debate as a spectator. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful as to what it is we're observing. And going back to what I was just talking about before, most of us on this call probably remember or are familiar with COINTELPRO and what it was they were trying to do. And this goes all the way back to the 60s and the 70s. And then come forward with, you know, they tried to get the blind sheik or the blind imam to put bombs in the World Trade Center in 93. And, you know, one of the places that I come from is having really had my eyes open when I started to read Miles Mathis. My eyes were already open and they just got blasted permanently open when I first read his paper on the Tate murders, okay, the Sharon Tate, you know, Charles Manson scenario, which was clearly hoaxed and faked with every single bit of scholarship and more than Jim Fetzer brings to all of his work. And once you understand why they did that, which is the term he coined, I never saw it before, was to blackwash the hippie movement and to blackwash the anti-war movement, which was quite prominent in 1969. And it was successful. Okay, it actually just absolutely killed the anti-war and so-called peace, flower children, hippie movement, and that was the goal. So you think that they may not be doing things like that now? Well, not so fast. Just always be wary of what we're looking at, which in many cases is a stage play. All the good qualities Trump possesses, notwithstanding, he does say many troubling things. I think, Jim, you'll admit this.
Of course, of course, of course. Mitchell, would you like to add a few words more? Mitchell. He may have stepped away here. Giuseppe.
I think that both gentlemen are making some excellent points, and especially about how the public, the voters, really wanted change. And Ron Paul should have been the Republican nominee, not George W. Bush. And on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders had clearly was going to win, and yet they pulled their chicanery with and put Hillary Clinton in place. And what's so vile about the two corrupt national political parties, the Democrat and Republican, is it's in their rules that they outright state, well, we don't really care what the public wants. We have it in our rules to decide who we want to be the candidate. So they're gatekeepers when there should not be gatekeepers. I mean, 100 years ago, this was a wide open economy and growth, but now this country is settled and we don't need two controlled parties. We need multiple parties to implement a realistic will of the people. We need a populist party. We need a green party. We need several different parties. So once again, the government will listen to its citizenry.
Yes, yes, yes. Scott, your further thoughts, Scott. Scott, are you still here?
I was just going to say precisely to multiple things that Giuseppe said, precisely would be the word. I'm very wary, though, of lots of parties. Because when you have this, have a kind of a cold. Are you there, Scott? Anyway, when you have a coalition of many different factors, or even the two different factors that we have, or two different factions, and of course there's more than the two, then you have a situation that is rife for control and takeover by you-know-who, especially when they control the purse strings and they control the dissemination of information.
Yes, yes, yes.
In an ideal world, though, everything that he was saying is absolutely, in my opinion, required. Yes.
Mitchell, if you're back with us, if you could join, I'd be glad. I notice our Scott left the conversation. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm here. Well, you know, it's the worldwide color revolution, and everything is going to be destabilized. Everything that is normal is going to be upset, and it's going to try to be reset. You know, everything. And, you know, it's this, the future of the planet is the war that's coming. And who is going to lead which side? I guess that's the real question that being worked out right now.
Giuseppe.
I think Mitchell hit it on the head. I think that right now I don't have a good feeling for the sovereignty of the United States, the way the average public is falling into the classic divide and conquer strategy, where these weak-minded, empathic, big-hearted people feel so bad for the black underclass and feel so bad for the homos. And you know what? Everybody from birth lives their own choices, and there's no reason to feel bad for people in most occasions. I feel bad for abused children. I feel bad for abused puppies and kittens. And other than that, you're making your own bed. And if people would grow up and stop acting like a little second grade schoolgirl who's like so caring about everything, and realize and see who their real enemy is, we could turn this around quickly. But I just have no faith in that.
Paul.
Yeah. So just returning briefly to the whole thought about, you know, elections and primaries and political parties. It's worth remembering also, and again, this just comes right from the book Vote Scam. I've mentioned many times on this show and other places, which I highly recommend, go online and read like the first five chapters for free. But it's absolutely without a doubt that they stole the primaries for George Bush Sr. back in 88, when he was on what they would call the toboggan ride to oblivion after New Hampshire. And then all of a sudden, you know, in a Joe Biden type of miracle, George Big Daddy Bush won the next several primaries in convincing fashion, contrary to what the polls would have indicated. So how does stuff like that happen? It's because we're completely and totally controlled. So, again, just like I said, I'm reinforcing the theme that at this point we're in a theater and we're watching a play. And we're not sure what the outcome is going to be. And it looks like it's a setup to me to go one of two ways, either create a lot of chaos and problems one way or the other.
Hold on a second, man. I hate to say it. I don't see it as a theater or as a play. It's like a Globetrotters basketball. You know who the winner is. You know who the selected loser is, and it's just clear as a bell.
Yeah, it's the WWE. It's like Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler. That's a little 80s or 90s reference there for you folks.
Giuseppe, go ahead.
I think that it is all Harlem Globetrotter-esque or professional wrestling-esque, and it's too bad, but again, you know, it began long, long ago with Carnegie and Rockefeller and I can't think of the third titan of industry that took over and wanted education to be dumbed down so they didn't have thinkers, they had workers. And it's gotten worse and worse up until the point now where with this Common Core communist initiative, you've got individuals who can't read, can barely speak, can't do math, but yet they're graduating high school, and it's a tragedy.
And you made a great point about that on another show too, Giuseppe. I think you I don't know which show it was, but you mentioned the fact about the the exit exam for high schools back in the early 1900s and how most college graduates can't pass the exit exam for a high school senior.
Yeah, isn't that embarrassingly bad? You're absolutely right.
I've actually seen some of that same work.
Yeah, the quality of our education has just fallen precipitously. I think the future of the nation is very much in jeopardy as a consequence. We're producing individuals who are intellectually, mentally unqualified to deal with the problems life presents. It's very, very bad, shameful, and appears to have been a deliberate policy, in part most recently engendered by social political correctness and social promotion, so students would be embarrassed by not moving forward with the other members of their age group. It's terrible and deplorable, but the grim reality we face. Giuseppe.
Right.
It is a grim reality, Jim. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Are you telling me that in 1900, the WOPs didn't get bonus points in their high school stuff? Oh, that's terrible.
We are telling you that. That's right. All the other groups that have had to integrate into American society did it on their own merits. But now this one subgroup is asking for a special privilege and inversion without any effort on their part. Americans are just supposed to turn over their homes out of an excess feeling of compensation for events of the distant past. It's insulting beyond belief.
Well, to add, if I may, a little personal family color to this theme, I can remember well what my mom always used to tell us and tell me back, you know, when we were going to elementary school back in the 60s into the 70s. So my mom was born in 1924, and, you know, she grew up poor in the South and actually in Alabama. And she told us how, you know, how lucky we kids were to have everything we had and to have the books and so forth, because she couldn't afford the school books. So she had to get up early and go to the library or stay after school extra and study, you know, her books in the library, because she didn't have her own that she could take home with her like some of the other kids. And that when she was in high school, they all had to take 2 or 3 years of Latin. And she used to show her report cards to us. It was all A's and B's. And, you know, my mom was a prolific reader, you know, quite literate, but she only had a high school education. She didn't go any further. And, you know, you think nowadays, and we've all run into these people. I've run into many people that have college degrees, both young adults and middle age and older adults. And why do they seem so uneducated to me and not familiar with just the most basic things? It has to be on purpose.
You had a great mom there, Paul. I'm very impressed.
Very. I did. Thank you.
Very impressed. Giuseppe.
You know, what's even more disgusting, Jim, about the whole concept of reparations is that it takes you 5 minutes of basic research to understand that the historical slave trade was controlled by the internationalist Jew. The internationalist Jew owned all the ships. They owned all the transport mechanisms. A majority of slave owners in the United States were wealthy Jews and wealthy aristocrats. The average white person didn't own slaves. I'm late to this country. I'm a second generation, actually one and a half generation. My Sicilian Nana was pregnant with my father when she came over on the boat, and my German grandfather, I'm fifth generation. He came over about the late 1800s, 1880 or something. So, you know, I have nothing to do with slavery. But what's interesting is, if you remember part of this a few months ago, the great Corona scam was something with the Great Reset, where they knew what was coming and they sold short, which means they bet in the Wall Street casino that the stock market was going to collapse, and the internationalist Jew gamblers made about $150 trillion. So why, if they were in any way ethical, in any way had a sense of tithing and morality, why don't those vulgar, filthy, rich, beyond belief individuals, why don't they pay reparations, since they controlled the slave trade.
Good point. Good point. Paul, you're
yeah, well, you know, the whole...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the whole idea of reparations is absurd, and we have probably all seen or read it being dismantled multiple times online. I mean, and also to add to that fact is about the percentages. I've read and heard variations of 2% or 3% of Southerners own slaves. I don't really know what it is, but it stands to reason that only, you know, property, landowners, people with some sort of an enterprise that needed that kind of labor would use or benefit from slaves. And everybody else, all the rest of the white people, derive no benefit at all from so-called slavery. And it's just people have been slaves throughout history. And you can read about white slavery and the white slave trade. Every single race has been subjected to slavery. And basically, in the past, if you were conquered, you were likely to become a slave if you weren't killed. So just like grow up, stop your crying, get over it. Some black people do have some legitimate grievances, but the problem that they're suffering from is they're just not competitive in a modern society. And as far as just an overall human attractiveness and human manners, they're just not that desirable. And that's not their fault. You know, I don't fault somebody for how they were born. But these are realities that we have to deal with. And what we're presented with is the inversion. You know, the fact that they're always telling us how Black Lives Matter. If I was a black person, I'd be insulted by this.
Yeah.
You know, they can look around. They can see. They can look in the mirror. They can see what it's like in their own communities. And they got to know that they're being mocked by this whole Black Lives Matter thing. Because in many cases, they know that it isn't necessarily so. You know?
Mitchell.
You know, Paul, I look at KKK Klantifa and the KKK BLM, as I refer to them. I look at them as people who, in this society, they don't have any power, any structure. God, I'm trying to think of the soy boys that don't get any nookie that are so lonely. I'm trying to think of that slang name for them. But, you know,
incel.
Yes, the incels. And, you know, most of these people in these groups are incels that have no power or even control and power in their own life. So, you know, they've essentially been banded together into this cult. And, you know, this is, to me, this is where they get their power and their motivation from. But, you know, I'm kind of jealous that, you know, I can't be a reparations asylumee, you know, where I don't have to pay. You know, my family came here, you know, one of them was here for a long time on my mom's side. She's a Preble. And my dad. The Bups came from the German Dutch frontier in the late 1880s, sometime in there. So one was late to the show. The other one was ingrained really in the history of the United States is Rear Admiral Edward Preble is in my lineage. So, you know, I was always happy when we were kicking Libya's ass because that just it was a, you know, a kin thing. So, but, you know, we all have opportunities and everything is going to change. And this new paradigm they're trying to flip into is it's not freedom. It's limitation by social justice. You know, if you want to say national socialism, you know, you can. So,
you know, I got to make a quick point. The ridiculousness of this whole Black Lives Matter effort and the focus on the impoverished. I'm looking at the federal U.S. poverty statistics, and 20% of blacks are impoverished. That's the highest level of any race. That means that 80% of the blacks in this country are making it. Why aren't we focused on the 80% who are doing well and who are moving on their own steam? And it's just so insane that the globalist media industrial complex doesn't report that.
Well, because committing elementary fallacies can be politically expeditious. By the way, Patrick in the R chat observed that for Paul, that it's the eighth grade exam they can't pass, not the high school, the eighth grade. It's that bad.
More than likely. And by the way, for anybody taking notes out there, I went to a parochial school in Ohio, elementary school back in the 60s. And at the sixth grade, and during the sixth grade, we were all given these achievement and level tests. And I was reading at the 12th grade level in the sixth grade. Meanwhile, today in California, right, there's people that are graduating high school that are reading at the fourth grade level. Yes. How the hell does that happen?
I agree, Paul. It's disgraceful. Is it social promotion? Yeah, Mitchell.
A quick note. In Pennsylvania, Paul, when I grew up in the 70s, I graduated high school in 1978, and there were lawsuits then against the State Board of Education in Pennsylvania about kids that were graduating high school that couldn't even read or write. And, you know, they took them to court, and that was the only way that they could get any justice or force the school to train to work with them. It was after that they brought in all the handicapped people into the schools in special ed programs. And before that, it was Easter Seals and a lot of private places taking that burden. But when that was happened, that's when they merged those two systems, and they were able to have classes that required a lower threshold to graduate. And what they would do a lot of times is just shunt people into different keyholes wherever they could graduate, whether they, you know, fit that disability or not.
And I think Jim would be the first to defend a public education. I think it can be, and it has been, a blessing, but it's now been completely perverted and controlled by the usual suspects to very mischievous and nefarious ends. And it's really just it's both heartbreaking and infuriating.
Yeah, you guys have been great. I'm so glad you joined me today. Giuseppe, I want you to have the last word as we conclude our conversation today.
Well, I just want to tell Paul that I went to Catholic school for my first 9 years, and I took that Catholic test in fourth grade, and I was told I was reading at a college senior level at that point, not to brag or anything.
Damn you.
Oh, I know. You guys are extraordinary. You have excellent minds, and you see through. You cut through the smoke and mirrors, and it's part of the reason I admire you so much, and I'm so glad you're participants in these shows. And Mitchell is just doing a superb job of producing. Another way of saying how glad I am to be back with Revolution Radio and to be doing shows on both Monday and Tuesday. So let me encourage everyone, check in tomorrow, where I'll have Rolf Lundgren, who's really quite expert at political analysis, giving his critique of how things are going vis-a-vis Trump's re-election and the rest of it all. Thanks you all for joining us today. Mitchell, if you have a final word, you're welcome to it.
There we go. Mitchell should join in more regularly. It's awesome when he participates.
Yeah.
And Giuseppe, my age.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.